now we're getting onto part two of the talk. So the methods that we have so far has been just simply used to determine whether a time series is reversible or not. And the next four methods that we're going to describe is more it's more about looking for different asymmetry in the data that correspond to a direction of time. The first one we have is what I call the skewness of changes in volatility. So this is the idea that Tom has. It's really about the intuition of, in a financial time series, typically you would see the volatility would shoot up based on some time, some events, and then it would slowly decay. So in terms of the, if you think of the volatility as the speed of change of the sentiments in the market, you can appreciate that in forward time direction, it would change a lot faster than the other way around. So if you look at the skewness of that change of volatility, you would expect distribution to be positive when you're going forward in time. And this is exactly what we're testing for. And so we in terms of data, we have 8 data sets. And 5 of them belongs to come from future contracts of different types, including like equity indexes, bonds, precious metals, energy, and so on. And the last 3 data sets are basically stock prices. And these are intraday data. And for this particular method, it works quite well in terms of success rate, it's about 75% or so. And but it, for some reason, it tends to work better in the for the futures contract than the equity data. We'll do a more thorough comparison in the for different methods later on in the talk. So now let me pass the stage to Wade.
Okay. So I call this the method the multi-resolution detection of local time asymmetry. So the general idea is that the time asymmetry, or some of the time asymmetry at least, can be captured by the fact that there are these time asymmetric processes in the market and that they have a specific signature in the time series. And so within that framework, in the case of this workshop, we're looking for sort of this characteristics spike followed by tail pattern, having this pattern is fairly uncontroversial on the longest time scales of the time series. There's big news events, and you can see this very clearly. And the question is how much does this pattern persist down to the shorter time scales, and how well can you extract the signature from the other noise and the other. Well, not always, but the other signals in the marketplace that might obscure it. We just came up with a very simple pattern detection followed by local asymmetry test on data that was, first of all, filtered and cleaned up. So I'll just show you how that works. So this is about a day's worth of trading, and in the blue time series, is the original signal. You can see it's fairly rich on different scales. For some of the classification algorithms that we did, it's helpful to do a filtering of the shorter time scales, and so you can use wavelets, for instance, to do that. And the red is the reconstructed wavelet series, which, as you can see, is quite a bit smoother. So once you sort of pre-process the signal in this way, you can start looking for what I call excursions, which are departures of the volatility from some baseline and plus the return. So the volatility goes up and then comes back down. That defines a given interval on which you could test for time asymmetry. Okay, so the green markers are where the classification algorithm has identified the beginning and end of an excursion. So here there's five boxes where you could do the test. So the complete picture is that we start with a volatility series extracted from the original ticker data. And so there's different choices here. The results we found are fairly insensitive, although there is some dependency on what market you trade, whether the instantaneous or moving window type volatilities give you the stronger signal. Some of the issues that come up is you have to worry about outliers, which can mask a lot of the asymmetry. And as well, some of the classification algorithms don't do so well when there's the high frequency noise. So the next step is, once you've got a volatility series that you want to use, you identify the excursions, and in each excursion, you then do a time asymmetry test. So the choices here are you could go for a fairly robust test where you might just split that window into left and right about a midpoint and then integrate the left and right. And if one area is larger than the other, then it's got a specific orientation. So there's more weight on the left or more weight on the right. An alternative approach is just to give more structure to it, assume it has a specific shape, and then it can convolve it with some shape function. But for purposes of this analysis, we just took the more robust, just integrating the left and right halves of the window, and looked for asymmetry. That would certainly detect a monotone decreasing function like the spike and plus the tail. And so once you've made the decision on each of these intervals, the final step is to combine these decisions into an overall decision for that time series. So if there are more of these windows looked symmetric in one direction or asymmetric in one direction rather than the other, then you would make an overall decision based on the majority, or you could weight them by the duration, which is what we did. So some of the choices there. Okay, so these are the results. The left side, like the zero of the x-axis, corresponds to a 50-50. So you're doing no better than flipping a coin. Any positive blue signal is an indication that you're getting more right than you're getting wrong over 20 days of trading data for each of the eight symbols that we looked at. The green is a 20 out of 20. So, you know, if we do a one box and two box analysis, so we look at a day's worth of data and we identify one or two excursions, which are typically on a scale of a half or a third of a day, then we find quite a strong signal towards time asymmetry in a given direction. It's about 65 to 75% correct. Some are less, some are more. And this is what's interesting, and why I showed the four different plots, is that as you go to the shorter time scales where you expect some of the noise to hide the signal, you find that the decisiveness degrades. If you go to the three-box analysis, where you're forcing the algorithm to look at shorter scales to do the asymmetry test, you find that you're gradually going towards the 50-50 sort of noise band. And when you do a four-box analysis, so maybe a quarter of a day's worth of trading, you find that you get one of them, for instance, is you make the wrong decision on, and the others are close to the 50-50 noise. But one other feature I'd point out is that in going from two box to three boxes, some of the symbols got improved a little bit, which suggests that there's a certain heterogeneity of where these spikes entail, like how long typical strength and duration of these patterns are. And so that's not unexpected, because if you look at the 20 days data all combined, you can see these patterns with your eye, and on some stocks they occur at slower frequencies and some at higher frequencies. Okay, so just to wrap up, the next step is to one of the last things we found was, and we haven't had a chance to improve the algorithm on the basis, is remove the very large outlying surges in volatility that occur. Another interesting direction is the realization that if you do go with the hypothesis that these shocks are caused by news events, then it makes sense to look at the signals within a long duration event. The smaller duration excursions relative to that long duration event can be masked by what's going on the longer scale. So really, to make a decision on those shorter events, you should actually detrend the larger scale event that it's nested within. And similarly, if you look at long-term trends, such as the fact that many instruments trade more in the morning and at close to closing, you should really ask this question not just relative to a constant average, but to sort of the known baseline, which could actually fluctuate on a longer time scale. And those that should really be, that sort of detrended signal should be what you'd make the local asymmetry decision on. And finally, you should allow, for different types of markets, you should allow yourself different parameters for the identifying local asymmetries, because there is sort of different time scales. So that's where we got with that.
Thank you, Wade. So the first two methods that we have so far in identifying the direction of time is mainly focusing on the prices or the volatility of prices in the time series itself. And if you think of the price in a financial market as an agreement of what the underlying assets should be, the volatility is really how fast the opinion changes in time. But what we thought would be interesting, like the data set that we have, in addition to the time series, we also have the aggregated trading volume alongside with the prices. So we thought, okay, well, that might contain some information as well, because if you think about it, the volume of trading at a specific time period and at a specific price, it's really, you can consider that to be the weight of the degree of belief in that price, and also it can be a proxy of market activity. So the next method that I'm going to talk about here is mainly to we'll take a radically different approach. Instead of looking at any information about prices, can we extract any information from the market activity alone to determine the direction of time? And one well-known status fact in financial markets is that if you look at the volume traded on each day, shortly after the market open and shortly before the market closes, usually that's where most of the trading volume happens, because in the morning you would have overnight you have a lot of news events that happen overseas, possibly, and there might be a lot of pent-up demand or supply in a certain financial instrument. So the trading tends to happen quite rapidly in the morning, and sometimes people are just reacting to certain news event that happened right before the market, and they're really searching for direction. And right before the market closes, especially for the mutual fund industry, they aggregate all the orders through the day and start trading after 2 p.m. and they have to complete the trading before the market close. So that would contribute a lot of market activities in that area as well. So the idea is in this approach is that, okay, well, given we know some basic pattern in this market activity, if we remove that trend, can we look at the residuals and figure out some patterns that can help us to look for the tell what the direction of time? So the first step that we did was to remove the trend from the volume data, and the left hand side of the graph is four examples from a specific market. In this case, it's the Apple stock, and you can see the if I fit a trend there, it fits that U-shape hypothesis quite well. But being real life data, it doesn't always fit that template really well, and not all markets follow that template either. And one counter example would be the energy market on the right hand side. But nevertheless, even though the trend is more complicated, after removing the trend, we thought, okay, well, maybe we can figure out some pattern in there. And we try a few different features, and one of them, given the limited time that we have, one of the very simple feature that we find surprisingly works surprisingly well is to look at the ratio between the market activity in the early part of the trading and the later part of the trading. In this specific case, we look at the volatility of volumes or the variance of volume in the first 60 minutes of trade versus the last 60 minutes of trade. And even though, well, this indicator seems to be market dependent, but it's surprisingly decisive and consistent. And this is the performance of the simple indicator in the data sets that we have. And it works quite consistently in the futures market. And for the equity market, some works better than the other. And it really depends on with the limited names that we have here. It seems like it's really dependent on the period that we're looking at. Like with the data that we have, we're looking at 1 month continuous trading activity. And some of the markets have, as far as the market activity is concerned, has shown a very consistent trend, and we were able to pick up that trend with this simple pattern detection technique. And the next approach Haohan is going to talk about is really going back to the idea that we've been looking at the volatility, which has come from price information. And now we have this approach looking at the market activity, and that approach is to see if we can somehow combine the two high-level ideas together and find another indicator.
As Eddie mentioned, we just want to find the relationships between them. The instant volatility and the swooning to see if there is any relationships between the time orientation and that. And the left graphs we show, we have 8 contracts and each contract has 20 daily data. The first graph shows an example of contract A and 2 daily data of the relations between the volatility and the volume. And however, from this data, we cannot tell anything about this time orientations. However, we do suspect if we shift the time scheme for the volume for some positive or negative numbers, we can find the relationships between the time orientations and this difference. And here we show the graph. We shift the time, we're running with T plus K, here K equal to 1. We shift the time scheme for volume, and this is the relationships. And we can see for this data, we have many noise. So we try to use the robust regressions on this data, and we use the slope of the robust regression to represent the relationships between the volatility and the volume. And for each time shifting scheme from -5 to +5, we can find the graphs of the slopes. And if the time series is totally reversible, those graphs should be almost symmetric. However, from this graph, we can find some asymmetry here. So maybe we can find something in common about the asymmetry, which can tell us the time orientations of the time series. So then here we propose the 2 testing methods to test the relationships between the asymmetry and the time orientations. First, we find the integration of the left of the negative side of the left side and the integration of the right side to compare which side is bigger, which side is smaller. And the second method is we consider that if we shift the time with just 1 and -1, this is most importantly we might need to consider. So we just compare the slope at k equal to 1 and the slope at k equal to -1. Then the decision zone for this is easy. I just show an example of the decision zone for the first method, and the rules for the second method should be similar to that. And first, we calculate the log value of the left side integration divided by the right side integrations, and because for each one contract we have 20 daily data, so we can count the number of this 20 daily data of the log value is less than zero. So we find we can say which number is majority. The majority is less than zero, or the majority is bigger than zero. Suppose here we said it, and the majority is smaller than zero. Then we can lead to the conclusion that for that contract, this left integration is smaller than the right side integration. This is like the features of that contract. So we can use the features to test the data of the to test the testing data to see if the time series is flipped or not. So here, if we suppose the majority is smaller, then we can say that we can do the same process on the testing data. If the log value is bigger than zero, then we can say the time series of the testing data is flipped. Otherwise, it's not flipped. And here's some sample examples. For the contract E, we have 20 daily data here, and we found we can count that most of this log value, the order of log value is negative. So we can say for the contract E, the features of the log value should be less than zero. So the left side integration should be smaller. Then we can use the features to test the testing data, and this is ratio of the left integration being smaller than the right integrations, and the ratio of the slope at ky is greater than the k equal to negative 1 for each contract. The ratio is greater than 50% of this means the left side integration is smaller than the right side integrations. That's the features of that contract. The ratio is less than 50% means the left side integration should be greater than the right side integrations. That's the feature of the contract. We can use the features to test all the testing data we need. So, okay.
If I can take 15 seconds to wrap up here. Here's the summary of the result of the four methods. And the main takeaway is that each of the method on itself works about the same, it delivers about the same performance, roughly 75% to 80% accuracy. But it's interesting to see that they tend to work well in different types of markets. So the next step, one possible next step could be to use some sort of machine learning algorithm, like a mixture expert, to combine the methods together or some Bayesian model averaging to deliver a better overall result. And just really quickly, I think we've done quite a good job in terms of solving the problem itself, but the most important thing is that we have gained further understanding of the fine structure of the time series that we're looking at, which is probably have a more profound impact in other areas of the operation that we're interested in. And with that, I would like to thank you again for everyone's attention, and especially for our team's contribution to the problem. Thank you.